I watched the president give his speech from the Ellipse. I believe that was around noon. And when he concluded, walked over to discuss and work on the Electoral College certification in the Capitol. Some of us were up in the gallery while that was unfolding, while we were going through the objections to Arizona that were raised by some of my colleagues. That's when, you know, we heard the protest. Obviously, we're told to stay away from the windows at a certain point. You know, we were informed that there were that folks had you know, breached the Capitol itself, and that there were protesters inside the building. We were secured in the House chamber. They locked all the doors. I reassured my colleagues we're in the safest place that we could be. But after about 10 minutes, we were told that there had been tear gas fired in the rotunda to don the inhalation hoods that were under our seats in the event of smoke. And then after a few minutes of that, we realized that some of the pounding on the door wasn't just the doors being secured. It was folks who had you know, gotten to just outside the House chamber itself. So we rapidly evacuated, went down, you know, with police, you know, escorting us part of the way, you know, their firearms drawn. Went down in an elevator into a tunnel, started walking, didn't know what was going on, didn't know what was secure. Many times I was with 30 to 40, you know, other lawmakers. There were no police. They were all kind of in disarray at that moment. Eventually, we found safety in a committee hearing room and had some police who were guarding the door. And it was while we were in that hearing room for several hours that the president, you know, about 2.5 hours after the assault began, put out a comment or a video. He had otherwise been pretty silent, except for criticizing Mike Pence and saying the vice president failed to do his duty while the Capitol was being ransacked. But he, at that point, tweeted out a video that, you know, I was hoping would provide the leadership we needed in that tough moment. You know, I think he could have acted to call off the group. He could have tried to cool down the tensions. Instead, you know, he praised the people who had just stormed the Capitol, who we knew had caused at least one fatality. We didn't know that Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who had been bludgeoned with a fire extinguisher, we didn't know that he was on life support and would pass away, you know, shortly after. You know, I just broke at that point. I mean, the fact that when we needed leadership, when we needed someone to rise to the occasion, you know, he sided with the people who were attacking us, not with the Constitution or his oath of office.
What went into your decision to impeach? Was it a long process? Did you consult with others, or did you just know instinctively?
I'll be honest, this is something I agonized over. I've been, you know, looking at all angles of this, considering the timing, considering the due process, considering the political ramifications, considering, you know, the every stage of this. I know, you know, oftentimes, you know, you have conversations with other members and say, you know, help me walk through. Here's what I'm thinking. I mean, this was a vote of conscience by many. I respect the decision that a lot of my colleagues made not to impeach. I think there are valid arguments. At the end of the day, you know, I had to go with my gut. I had to go with my conscience. You know, I read the articles, and they were appropriate. They were what we experienced and what happened. And I had to vote yes and support that impeachment.
How did being from Grand Rapids, the home of President Gerald R. Ford, and the history of Watergate play into your vote?
Yeah, that'd been something I really reflected on. I have a book of President Ford's speeches, and he gave a speech at the Order of De Monet, I believe, in 1968, that just talks about, you know, the dark place the country was in then after, you know, multiple political assassinations, but also what kind of unites us and ties us together. You know, his pardon of Richard Nixon, you know, something I look back on as an act of political courage and grace. It was the end of his career. I mean, it you know, put him in an impossible position politically, but I think historically is widely viewed as one of the most important steps and most politically courageous moves of a president. You know, I reflected on that pardon and the distinction between where we are today and where President Ford was is that President Nixon had resigned. He had accepted responsibility for his actions. So I think that grace can be applied in those situations. But, you know, the president still hasn't taken responsibility, still refuses to kind of acknowledge, you know, what role he may have played publicly. And the rhetoric and that led up to the attack on the Capitol, and in order to have unity, in order to heal, in order to move forward, you know, we have to have accountability first.
Does being new, a freshman in the U.S. House, allow you more freedom in your decision making?
No. If anything, it probably restricts me more because you don't have a deep track record in the community. You don't have, you know, longstanding relationships with colleagues. Or with leadership, you know, throughout this process, I've had an opportunity to build, you know, kind of in this crucible, some very solid relationships with other members. But, you know, this is, you know, I may have committed political career suicide, but, you know, I'd rather, you know, be able to look myself in the mirror and know that I voted, you know, how my conscience told me than, you know, take a vote for political expediency.
The impeachment vote was largely along party lines. Why are your colleagues' views and arguments different from yours?
I think there are a lot of fair arguments. I would point out that a significant number of my colleagues, you know, believed there was some merit, but had valid concerns with the process, that it was too rapid. I think those are very valid arguments to make, and I respect, you know, my colleagues who have made those arguments. I just couldn't. When I tried to convince myself of them, I just couldn't convince myself. You know, I think I don't like the precedent, but we also had an unprecedented attack on the Capitol. I think the need to send a strong message and to promote accountability, I think that at the end of the day overruled what concerns I had and my frustration with the process that Nancy Pelosi insisted upon for this impeachment.
Your colleagues are calling for unity after the fact. You point out acceptance of responsibility being necessary.
Yes, I think in, you know, I agree we need to heal these wounds. But if we don't hold folks who are responsible for the actions leading up there, if we don't ensure there's accountability for those who were, you know, deceiving people who trusted them or those who didn't stand up to their oath of office, as I believe the president, you know, failed to do. If we don't do that, then, you know, we'll never actually be able to heal. We'll just be papering over those wounds. The divides will still be there, and we'll be in the same place, you know, before too long.
Your statement mentions the president betrayed and misled millions of Americans with claims of a stolen election. That message has been repeated and amplified by Republicans in the U.S. House and Senate. Do you see Republicans in the House and Senate walking back some of their previous statements if we want to have that unity and healing?
There's definitely been a softening. I will be, and I've been speaking with colleagues about this. I think there needs to be much more clear commentary from a number of folks who, you know, may have been less emphatic, but still struggle to say that the election wasn't stolen and that Joe Biden did win. Now, make no mistake, I have deep concerns about election integrity. I think there were a lot of process modifications that were made because of COVID and the pandemic, such as the wide expansion of absentee ballots. I think there were states like Florida and in Texas who managed to have very successful and secure elections throughout. But the idea that there was, you know, this was a landslide victory for Donald Trump and that, you know, Joe Biden lost, I mean, there's no support for that. There's no cases that have held up in a court of law, no credible substantiation. Even the president's own lawyers weren't arguing that. And yet many politicians continued to tell people who trusted them, to tell things that weren't true. So that will be a part of the accountability that we need to make, because we can't have, you know, Americans living in two, you know, different worlds with different beliefs of truth and fact. We can have differences of opinion, but we can't, you know, argue on some kind of fundamental components and expect to be able to work together. So I think that's a division that needs to be bridged.
I've read and watched a number of your recent interviews. You've alluded to Trump supporter intimidation weighing on messaging and ultimately the decision-making that's been taking place with a number of your colleagues. How real is that? And I guess, how do you then walk in this landscape of people who don't believe the election results?
It'll be hard. I mean, going into the Electoral College certification process, I believe it was Eric Trump who said, you know, any Republican who doesn't, you know, vote to try to overturn this election, you know, we'll be primaried. We'll be in your backyard in 6 months. Right? I mean, those were the type of, you know, political threats, but there are also, you know, significant threats to of personal safety. I have a colleague who, you know, currently has is under armed, has an armed escort and security because of death threats. And this was before today's impeachment. I mean, the political temperature is dialed up. As we saw with the assault on the Capitol, there are folks who've been told, you know, that their country is at stake, and not that, you know, we need to look to the future and be involved in the political process, you know, but that political violence is somehow justified. And that is not something we can ever accept. That's something we need to build, you know, social and civic trust. And that's where I know with this vote, I could very well lose a primary. This could be, you know, the end of my career. I look forward to attempting to rebuild some of the trust that some may feel this vote has eroded. But at the end of the day, you know, there's far more than unites us than divides us. And, you know, the people of this country deserve leaders who will tell them what they need to hear, not just what they want to hear.
You're a U.S. veteran. You may not be intimidated by these threats. How does that military experience in the background play into much of this decision that you've had to make? You talked about leadership, and I know that's so important when it comes to military experience.
Yeah. I think it's a belief in, you know, a political leader at the end of the day, you know, has, you know, unlimited accountability for the actions of the organization they run. That was one of my deep frustrations with President Trump's response, is just a continual inability to take responsibility for actions that he is responsible for, and that he, you know, bears a hand in how the outcome occurred. That's why I said his response was unfit. It was disqualifying. As I said, that was a moment we needed leadership. We needed to see the president step up, firmly condemn political violence. He shouldn't have waited until, you know, 2 hours after the assault began. In that moment, you know, when the nation needed that leadership, he couldn't provide it.
What do you expect will happen in the Senate trial?
I think it's too premature to talk about that. I'm sure Mitch McConnell will put the interests of the country first, and I think we will see that opportunity to open up more arguments. And I hope it's an illuminating process for the country.
Republican U.S. Representative Peter Meyer from Grand Rapids, thank you so much.
Thank you.